He'll spill your tray. He'll drop when he picks up your stretcher. It's 2-1, you'll flop. You're sick, but quick, get out of sight. The disorderly orderly's on duty tonight. He'll bounce your bed and split your splint. And though he's got you screaming, he never gets the hint. You might as well give up the fight. The disorderly orderly's on duty tonight. He'll try so hard to please you, but if you need an ice pack, watch out, he'll freeze you. The lovely nurse comes to the door. Our hero says,
"Excuse me,"
and crashes through the floor. You must admit that he's polite. The disorderly orderly's on duty tonight.
Hello. Welcome to Movie Humpers. My name is Bob Sham.
I'm Angela.
And the sound here may be dogs. And all month long, we have this theme we're calling Awkward Laughter to the Flop. A lot of modern comedies, or from the late 90s, early 2000s, that didn't do so great at the box office or did not hit that expectation, we're re-examining them several years after the fact. But there are three Mondays this month in which we're discussing a trio. We're discussing a trio of movies. That's three Mondays. That makes a trio. By a fellow by the name of Jerry Lewis, a man who made money. We're discussing three movies from his post-Martin and Lewis era. And he's kind of our spiritual mascot of the month. Even though he didn't make that many flops, though he did see maybe near the end that The Day the Clown Cried would be a pretty interesting flop, and someday we will
never even released, right?
Someday we will, no, never. I gotta call the Library of Congress next month, I think, and harass them about, or I'll just be a scholar. I'm a scholar. I would like to come and watch the uncut footage of The Day the Clown Cried, please. And maybe I can get that done, but until then,
maybe you have to apply for a Library of Congress card.
Yeah. Is that a joke?
I don't know.
What if you could get a Library of Congress?
You might have to do some kind of thing. Like, you might have to, like, apply to be able to go there and watch it.
I
need to look into this.
Oh, let's look into what exactly they do. I think it's just a great national archive, essentially, right?
Yeah, and as long as you're not taking anything out, you should be able to look at anything.
Sure, yeah.
And what if there's a restricted section? What do you think they would have in the restrictions?
Porn?
Restricted section.
Turn it, golden age porn. So this is my first official introduction to Jerry Lewis through his movies. I didn't grow up watching his movies like you did. I grew up with the weird images of him, clips of his movies, him having a pint glass in his mouth, which I always found funny, and then being like angry. And yeah, he probably wasn't that, he wasn't a great guy to his kids, right? He beat his kids. But you know when he was beating his kids? Shit was zany and nutty as fuck. Probably no one beat their kids funnier than Jerry Lewis. Not Bing Crosby, not Frank Sinatra, nobody.
Bobby, you know that was not funny. And this is just another case of what we've seen. I mean, we've seen this through the years, and it's just very sad. I mean, that some of the funniest people are also either like the saddest or worst.
Yeah.
You know?
I gotta...
They're not always bad, but if they're not bad, they're fucking sad.
I just displayed a dark sense of humor a moment ago. And I can say that there is... I would say that humor can stem from insecurity. And it can be a healthy way to get that out, or at least how you grow up, the environment you grow up.
Yeah.
A little bit of like an emotionally isolated, latchkey type kid who spent a lot of time by himself... And sure, yeah, I was a clown.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little clown growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely stems from a sense of solitude. And I bet Jerry Lewis had some weird issues himself growing up. That's how you kind of become that. Funny people do have some dark shit on the back end of their brain.
A lot
no
of
doubt.
Times it's a coping mechanism.
And you really got to concentrate on doing the best you can to try to at least be a little bit of a better person than you were before. Or else if you have that, you get into the funny business and then you become wildly successful and famous and rich. Then that could easily spiral into you being one of the worst fucking people ever. Corporal punishment was very common back in his day. If he's beating his kids, that means he probably got his ass beat all the time when he was a kid as well. The zaniest. So we know the legacy of Jerry Lewis. We've been discussing it all week, all month. We see it in TikTok videos. We see it in children's programming. Certain characters that we've, like your Jim Carrey's Tom Green, Freddy Got Fingered.
Kind of like a Melissa McCarthy, even. If
sure.
Trying to think of a lady
yeah.
that comes closest, because she just does very, like, physical.
Sure.
Sort of wacky. I'm thinking of the movies that we've seen of hers, and they're ridiculous.
Tammy. Yeah. The one where she's a spy.
Man, that spy scene.
That
where
one
they
scene
give her,
where
her
they get
purse
the,
full of
the hemorrhoid cream.
And
I
she's
did
like,
laugh
why
at
does
that
it have to be hemorrhoid cream? You laughed a lot at that scene.
So that was a long time ago. That is the one Melissa McCarthy scene that I did laugh my ass off at.
Yeah, yeah.
But what is the what inspired Jerry Lewis himself? You know, he came up like a lot of these actors, little kid in vaudeville, Looney Tunes. Like this mm-hmm. is this feels like the most Looney Tune of all the Jerry Lewis movies we've discussed so far. A lot of that classic slapstick that leads up to where he is now.
Yeah.
And he becomes this focus point of this very specific, goofy, nutty style. And in this movie, it is almost, like, I won't say this was so much more funnier than the ones we've watched before, but through this movie in particular, I've gained this weird fascination with the id of Jerry Lewis, like
yeah.
what he is and why he does what he does. Like, I'm getting used to him now, and it just looks like he's like a weird chaos god that is too stupid to truly understand that he is an actual chaos god. It's almost like God is punishing this establishment, this hospital, by placing a Jerry Lewis here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, someone in that hospital is being punished by God, and that is why Jerry Lewis is there as a little chaos deity to change something, because someone on earth did something wrong.
Katie the cook,
Kathleen Freeman,
plays his supervisor in this one, and
she
would
back.
Argue that it's her. That she's the one being punished.
She might be.
By his presence.
Or the administrator.
The administrator loves him because was in love with his father. This movie's called The Delicate Delinquent. No, it's not. The Disorderly Orderly.
From 1964, directed by Frank Tashlin, written by Frank Tashlin, Norm Lieberman, and Ed Haas. And starring Jerry Lewis, Susan Oliver, Glenda Farrell, and Kathleen Freeman.
That's very interesting that he did not write or direct this at all, because he did with the last one we watched. This movie is essentially like a absurdist comedy.
Yeah.
There's things that happen in this movie that are not physically possible.
This is why
our reality,
being a chaos deity makes sense.
Yes.
Also, I love how this movie just gets right into it. It doesn't establish this like, oh, I got to go and figure out how to work in this hospital. It does this setup about like picking a hero to focus on in the movie. And they're all dressed like Jerry Lewis. They're like conquerors or whatever.
They're all played by Jerry Lewis.
And then they pick the guy that works in a hospital, and it's like, and there we go. He's just in this
yeah.
fucking hospital. And he wants to be a doctor, but he had some fucking condition. I can't
it's
remember the name of.
It's basically crazy empathy.
What did Dr. Howard mean when she said that you had to leave medical school because of your neurotic identification empathy?
Oh, that's just a fancy way of saying I'm overly sensitive to someone that has pain. It's nothing more than sympathy pains. Everybody gets them, but it's bad for a doctor.
Much like in The Ladies' Man, what's the worst job a guy in that state can have? It's running a hotel full of women that he's repulsed by. What is now this guy who has
neurotic identification empathy?
like a psych
neurotic identification empathy.
Psychoempathy, to where when people describe their medical ailments, that he literally feels them. You probably shouldn't work in a hospital, but this guy wants to be a doctor. Yes. But he can't be a doctor because of this condition, even though it could still affect his job, even if he's not a doctor working in a hospital.
Yes, but at least he's not in charge of treating people.
He's the guy that rolls you around, gets you some sunshine.
Yeah, he takes the laundry. He delivers the lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And he listens to stories of the pain that you're in, and he,
and co-opts it emotionally.
Absolutely ridiculous. You know, you get the crazy big faces and the pulling your body around.
But
and,
much like in The Ladies' Man, it seems to conveniently fade out as the movie keeps going. It's all about the zany, the nuttiness. It's all mm-hmm. about nutting. And so there's one point where he's going to fix...
You said it's all about nutting.
Is that what I said?
Yeah, I think so.
That's what it's all about. So there's this snotty lady, because this is like a hoity-toity sanitarium hospital, right? And he wants this lady, wants her TV fixed.
Did you want me to fix your set?
It's about time. Look at that TV set.
Oh, well, there's nothing really terribly wrong. It's a...
I'm here for a rest. To cure my exposure.
This is a minor...
Forget about my fifth husband.
Yeah.
And I think the joke is that the fuzz... It's supposed to be like snow. So he opens up the TV and snow starts to blow. He's warping reality around
Absolutely.
And there's just snow coming into this room.
Gusts of wind.
From out of the TV. And no one is calling any government agencies or anything after this.
Like knocking people over.
This is some extreme paranormal activity that just occurred in this hospital.
Yes.
At one point, he light his fingers on fire, and he's just staring at it.
And it's like this huge cartoon flame that's like way big.
He's the scariest. You remember the Twilight Zone episode where the kid could do anything?
Oh, that's one of the scariest.
And they're all freaking out.
Yeah,
he's that kid, but he doesn't know he's that kid, right? And he's a sweet guy, so he's not going to be evil like that kid. But he's dumb enough to have no idea what's going on.
This is also a movie, and as soon as we
it
met
her... It is a movie.
Her, mm-hmm, this is also a story in which, from the beginning, a woman is interested in Jerry Lewis. And they have a dating relationship. They kiss at one point early on. She's so into him, and no one else really understands
Julie,
why.
Julie, right? Isn't it Karen Sharp as Julie?
Yes, I believe so. She's very pretty. She's got dark hair. Like, she's such a sweetie. She's a nurse.
Mm.
And she wants to be with him. And like I said, they date. But he feels like he's not complete. And he's going to the therapist at this place. Because like you said, it's a sanatorium and a hospital. So rich people just go there to relax sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Or to retire, even, it seems like.
Yeah, you want to retire to a sanitarium.
He goes to the psychiatrist, like, every day. And they're working on why he has this empathy problem. And he feels that he has to get that fixed before he can move on with anything in his life.
He has to clear himself of empathy.
You know, it made me think of the delinquent movie, because there's that part where he tells the girl...
I'm nothing
right now. When I'm something, something, I'll come see you when I'm something. You know, it's kind of that attitude without saying it. But the psychiatrist thinks that his issue is something related to a lost love or a love problem.
Yes, we get a flashback. He does lose a girlfriend.
He didn't lose a girlfriend. Or, he had a crush on a girl that he fucking spoke to.
Right.
She doesn't know who he is.
Now, Karen Sharp is pretty, very pretty. I prefer brunettes.
Yeah.
But when they cart Susan Oliver into this hospital, who was the green lady in Star Trek, and I got to maybe...
Hotter green.
Yeah. Just looking up her credentials and seeing that image of her in Star Trek as the green woman, it still does something to me. I think it affected me when I first saw it as a kid. And there's something about it. Like, it still does it? Why? I like green chicks, man. But yeah, she's pretty iconic in that role. So when you see Susan Oliver, even though she's not green, it's like, that's who that fucking lady is.
In this, she is we find out, a housewife who has taken a bunch of pills in a suicide attempt.
They found her in a third-rate flop house, I believe they describe it. And the person they're with died, apparently. And so,
I remember that part.
And even though this is for hoity-toity people, they bring this lady in, and she's kind of in a short coma.
Yeah, they basically, the administrator, who again loves Jerry Lewis because she was in love with his father when they were young. That part's kind of weird, but she's deferential to him. But she says, like, why did you bring her here? And they say, well, she's gonna die, and this was the closest hospital.
This man is hurting people, and this lady is like overlooking a lot to keep this guy around.
Because when she sees him, she sees the love that she lost.
Oh, another reality warping scene is when he goes and has spaghetti dinner with Julie, and he manages to roll the entire plate of pasta onto his hand.
And then he like takes it off like it's a glove. That's also the dinner where she confronts him, because when the blonde lady came into the hospital, he like fell in love on sight. She was in a coma.
He leaves a note to a comatose lady he doesn't talk to, telling her that he loves her.
Yes, because apparently her suicide letter said, there's no point living without love. And so he left her this note that said, you don't have to live without love. I love you and admire her.
And he knows her name. And no one else does.
Yeah, he knows her name. And, you know, his nurse, Julie, is like, you knew her name before anybody. You left her this note. You don't want to be with me because I snooped. I followed. She was trying to get to being able to tell him she knew.
Yeah.
But I love the way she kind of set it up. She was like, you shouldn't date me because I'm not honest, because I followed you and read your note. But also, like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like,
no, it's straight up creepy.
It is. Yeah, it's more creepy that he did that than that she read the note.
Yeah,
because,
for sure.
Because he shouldn't have been in her room. As soon as he walked in her room, he walks in her room a couple times.
This is
he
like,
stares at her when she's asleep once, and I truly was like, fired.
It's like
you're
when
fired.
It's like when someone in a relationship catches someone cheating in text, and then they come back, and then it's like, what are you doing looking at my text? But no, it was both. It was a bad.
How
analogy.
Is that? Well, no, it kind of is, because it's like, kind of. How is that? That's not as bad.
They didn't hold it against each other, but it kind of felt like that kind of a combo.
Well, because they have this weird moment where he tries to tell her, like, but I care about you. And she's like, but help me understand this. And he's like, I don't understand it. Like, he won't tell her. But then we get a flashback of him seeing Susan when they were young.
How could this man understand anything?
They went to the same high school.
Reality is changing around him. Yeah,
exactly.
He did know who this Susan was.
We went to the same high school. The day that he decided to go talk to her, she was like the head cheerleader. He decides to go talk to her after a game. There's a ridiculous part where he's got these pom-poms that are huge, and he's like beating this woman over the head basically the whole time while he's cheering. That was also a crazy, because she's just like,
he practiced at home.
And he sees her kissing a man, very similar to the last movie, although he did not have a relationship with
her. Nothing. She didn't even know who he was.
She didn't even know, but he was gonna talk to her, and he saw them kissing, and he,
that was enough,
broke
to,
his heart,
and that gave him his weird empathy,
neurotic identification empathy.
Yeah, which really doesn't make any sense, but fine. And so he tries to talk to her, and she's a bitch to him.
I mean, why would... Why, I would,
she shouldn't be...
She should be a bitch
well,
to this guy.
Well, she doesn't need
He's
to
weird.
Be... Well, until she catches him coming in her room, then, like, fuck him, right?
Yeah.
But at first, he's just trying to be like, hi, how are you today? She could at least just be like, I'm fine, thanks.
She's a
goodbye.
Snob at first, but...
She is.
But when she knows that he left the note, when that it was him... Then she kind of tells him off and tells him he's a giant creep.
Yeah, and she tells everyone who'll listen that he's a giant creep, and she's like, he should be fired.
But everyone around is like, he really likes you, you know? And then
he was just trying to be nice.
Turns out she needs, like, of course, this is where rich people go. So they're trying to kick her out because she has no money, and she's not with her old husband anymore.
But she needs months of treatment.
So that's when... by the way, Jerry Lewis's name is Jerome Littlefield. Jerome then works overtime day after day after day to pay for her her visit.
But he doesn't want anyone to tell her. And he eventually gets fired because he's so tired and he's trying to paint something and working, doing all these menial jobs. And he spills this paint on the guy who owns the hospital. He fires him.
Mr. Tuffington.
Oh, yeah. He's real tough, Mr. Tuffington. Real tough.
The psychiatrist at one point, while Susan Oliver's going off on what a creep Jerome is, rightfully so, the psychiatrist is like, well, he has been taking care of you.
Yeah, he tells the whole story to her.
He bought your fucking ass, bitch.
And then this weird thing happens. Why don't you give him a little something? Where he's ready to leave.
Yeah.
And he's got on his suit and he's got his suitcases because apparently he lives at the hospital and he's ready to leave. And she has this dress on and she meets him on the sidewalk and she's like, you can have me.
Yeah.
No one's ever been nice to me, but you are nice and you did this for me and no one's ever done anything like that for me. And so if you'll have me, you can have me. And he tells her basically in that moment that they've known each other since high school, even though she didn't remember him. And they kiss, like four or five times, but
he has to make sure that he's not in love with her. And that's when he realizes, and I actually kind of like this,
I do too,
that he actually loves Julie, the brunette that's been pining for him the whole time.
Except Julie and the curmudgeon, formerly Katie the cook, sees them kissing, and Julie leaves. She's on the way to the airport. She's quit. She's going home to live with her parents because he's broken her heart. So he... This part is insane.
Mr. Tuffington, he gets injured. He ends up in the back of an ambulance. And then something happens to where he's trying to leave and the ambulance... No, he's driving the ambulance to go find Julie. He doesn't know that Mr. Tuffington, the guy who runs the hospital, is in the back of the ambulance.
Mr. Tuffington, what are you doing there?
Stop this ambulance immediately!
You can't yell at me, I'm fired.
You're hired again!
Does that go for Dr. Howard, too?
Yes, she's hired again. Now stop this ambulance immediately!
Yes, sir.
These are Ghostbuster-style ambulances.
And something happens to where Mr. Tuffington pops out the back of the ambulance on a rolling gurney, and then it's like 10 minutes of like a chase. This was great.
It was great.
The last 10 minutes, like, I had no issue with, like, it was fun to watch them just madcap run around.
It was just insane.
Watching Mr. Tuffington roll around, and then in the whole chaos of all of this, that's when Jerome and Julie finally do get back together, and they get their jobs back at the hospital when they negotiate it with Mr. Tuffington at some point. Like, it's all crazy madcap, but...
Yeah.
But God is, it's Mr. Tuffington that God is punishing.
Yes.
By sending Jerome.
Yes.
Jerry Lewis down to work here.
Well, he's a bad man.
Julie and Jerome come together. It's like we forgot about Mr. Tuffington. He's been rolling down the street on a gurney the whole time. And then the end of the movie shows him rolling down to a pier. Mr. Tuffington flies off into the water. God is destroyed. Mr. Tuffington and the work of the chaos agent.
My favorite supernatural thing that happens in this movie, this has nothing to do with the plot, but he is walking a man out into the courtyard who is in a full body cast. And he walks this man out to the courtyard and he's like, I'm going to get you a chair. You just wait right here. And it's not even, it's truly like every bit of his body is a cast.
Yeah.
Before Jerome can get him in the seat, the man falls and he rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls through people and across roads and down hills and past trees. And he finally, Jerome's, I'm going to get you. It's a very long sequence also, but he's running. Jerome's jumping over people. And then the cast hits a tree and breaks into a bunch of pieces. And there's no man. And he's like picking up the foot bit, like yelling, like, where are you? Are you in there? Gone.
Jerome somehow transported his body, who knows, off to some other dark dimension. Who knows where this broken man is trapped in some realm that he doesn't belong.
He's in one of those spa pools in Halloween 2.
And Jerome doesn't even know he's doing this.
Yeah.
It's disturbing. This is like a science fiction film.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one part where in the crazy madcapness of it all, there's a bunch of shit falling down in a grocery store. And there's one point where a mountain of cans falls, and like you said, it exposed like people were inside of the mountain of cans. Right. It's truly insane.
No, this is, it's Jerome Littlefield's world, and we're all just puppets.
Mm-hmm.
We're all puppets in this fucking world. That's The Disorderly Orderly from 1964. A fascinating study in an idiot god that doesn't know he's a god. And I stand by that interpretation. It might be the interpretation for the majority of all Jerry Lewis movies, actually.
Yeah.
So, especially one as zany as this one. But you're going to give this 1 through 5. I'm going to give this 1 through 5 combined for best out of 10. I think this is, it got me thinking of things on another level. I felt like I understood Jerry a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say it's like the type of humor that really gets me going, but there is something about this movie and the implications are horrifying.
Yes.
I'm going to give it a 3.5.
I'm giving it a 3.25.
That is a 6.75. That is our highest rated. They go up a little bit more every time. Take a look at it, folks, at 6.75. Snugged sweetly. No, it's at the bottom of 6.75. right under Hotel Transylvania and The Birds.
Cool.
The Disorderly Orderly is at least as good as those movies. Also, only two other movies are on this list. Everything Everywhere All at Once and Border. So this movie is at least as good as those movies, if not better.
A couple other reality-bending films.
That's true. Some reality. Yeah, there's just some strange shit going on in the 6.75 rating. Check the shows for links, other places to find us. We've got a new link now. If you take a look, where it links to our little free website where you can go see the scores that we've made for the movies and where they've been updated at so far. We do shift them around from time to time. And also like and subscribe and leave comment corrections. You like your Jerry Lewis movies? I kind of thought this one was pretty good, but there were just things about it. I maybe thought about it in a way that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Some might say I overthought it, but I think I'm really onto something here. So what did you think about it? What's your favorite Jerry Lewis movie? Anyway, that's it for our Jerry Lewis this month. Bon voyage. I wouldn't mind talking about more Jerry Lewis in the future. It doesn't bother me.
Sure.
I feel more curious about the man. But that said, we will go. More flops for the rest of the month.
Justice for Ishtar.